When the Southern Humboldt Community Healthcare District began planning a replacement for its aging hospital, the future looked promising.
And then HR1 passed.
That was Matt Reese, CEO of Soham Health. HR1, also known as the One Big Beautiful Bill, was signed into law a year ago on July 4th, 2025. The budget reconciliation package included sweeping changes to federal healthcare funding. Now, hospital administrators say extensive federal healthcare cuts included in the legislation have dramatically altered their long-term financial projections, putting their future into question. Located in downtown Garberville, Gerald Phelps Community Hospital will no longer meet seismic requirements by 2030.
It's at the end of its useful life and needs to be replaced. And so we've designed the new hospital as we were preparing our projections for our USDA Rural Development Loan application. They were looking really good. And we're right in the middle of that, and then HR1 passed.
Reese says as a result, reimbursement programs the hospital depends on are being reduced.
Some of the programs that are being cut as much as 35%. And we just can't sustain that.
While many of the law's largest Medicaid provisions have yet to take effect, hospital administrators, patients, and elected officials say its effects are already being felt in California. Through the expiration of the Enhanced Affordable Care Act premium tax credits, changing reimbursement forecasts, and growing financial uncertainty for rural providers. However, supporters of the law have argued it reduces federal spending, adds work requirements for some Medicaid recipients, and targets fraud and abuse within the system. But critics counter that the legislation will reduce healthcare access for millions of Americans, while placing additional financial pressure on hospitals that serve large numbers of low-income patients. For one Southern Humboldt family, the effects were immediate. Raven, a small business owner and mother of two, who asked to only be identified by her middle name, said she and her husband recently made the difficult decision to go without health insurance after the expiration of the Enhanced Affordable Care Act subsidies, which pushed their premiums beyond their means. Her voice has been altered to protect her identity.
Being able to have affordable health insurance was huge for us. I have a lot of health issues. I had endometriosis and kyphiosis and had a lot of emergency surgeries, and having health insurance, was huge for us.
When the ACA tax credits expired, her family's premiums became unaffordable, forcing them to drop their coverage.
We were looking at about $30,000 a year just for the very, very lowest plan that they had.
Average monthly premiums for Affordable Care Act Marketplace plans rose by more than 50% in 2026, while average deductibles increased by more than 1,000 nationwide. That's according to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, the Bureau of Economic Analysis, and the Joint Economic Committee. For families in Southern Humboldt, where the median household income is just over $61,000, 38% lower than the state's average, those higher costs have left many with impossible choices.
We can't afford to pay that much money every year. We were joking about, like, you could finance a sailboat for, like, a luxury sailboat for the same price as what we would be paying for our health insurance premiums for the lowest health insurance plan. And it's life-changing.
According to available information from healthcare.gov, more than one in five people who enrolled in Marketplace health insurance this year were dropped from their coverage after failing to pay their first month's premium. Instead, families like Raven have chose to go uninsured. Her experience reflects concerns raised by Congressman Jared Huffman, whose district includes much of California's North Coast, from the Golden Gate Bridge to the Oregon border.
Now, I still haven't heard a convincing explanation for how any of this is supposed to help working families in this country. They've turned healthcare into something that feels more like a luxury commodity these days than an essential service.
Congressman Huffman puts the blame on Republicans, who overwhelmingly supported the legislation. Only Thomas Massey of Kentucky and Brian K. Fitzpatrick of Pennsylvania broke with their party and voted against it. Democrats, however, were unanimous in their opposition.
With all of these crazy skyrocketing costs for housing, groceries, utility bills, gasoline, Republicans decided health care should become more expensive too, and they've done nothing to stop us from going off the cliff that they created. Tens of thousands of people are facing terrible uncertainty, higher costs, fewer options when it comes to something many of us take for granted, that is our health care. And because much of my district is rural, the impact goes beyond individual patients. These cuts put terrible strain on our community clinics, on healthcare providers, rural health systems that are already stretched thin.
On the North Coast, Reese says Southern Humboldt exemplifies those concerns. In addition to its emergency room, the district operates an 8-bed skilled nursing facility, a pharmacy, and optometry department, the only providers of those services in the region, after private healthcare facilities closed during the pandemic.
We service about 1,000 square miles. We service a 125-mile stretch of the 101 where there's no other hospitals. And that you go 50 miles to the north, 75 miles to the south to get to the closest hospitals. East and west, you really don't run into a hospital. And now we have the coast, and then you head over to I-5 before you have another healthcare provider. So we service a huge area.
If the hospital was forced to close, the consequences would extend well beyond Garberville.
If we close because we can't build a new facility, meet the seismic standards, and because financially we can't make it because of these cuts, there's going to be a huge gap in care. Some of the people in our area are going to be 2.5-3 hours away from care, and it's just not acceptable.
But Reese says Southern Humboldt is far from alone.
I've been talking to other rural hospitals that are similar size to us in our state. Talked to all of them here in the last couple of months. And one of them was considering bankruptcy last fall. Another one is in bankruptcy. And another one is having the county help support them so they can make it financially. So with the cuts coming down from HR1, it's going to really cause a lot of discontinuation of services. It's going to continue to close hospitals.
He noted that another federally qualified health center in Southern Humboldt has already been impacted.
There is one other clinic. It's an FQHC. And yesterday they made the announcement that they're closing a couple of services. And so hospitals, clinics, everybody is getting hit hard.
Reese did not identify the clinic, but Southern Humboldt is served by only one other federally qualified provider, Redwood Rural Health Center. In a social media post, the organization announced it was making strategic adjustments. Kim Peterson, a patient services manager who oversees public relations for Redwoods Rural, said the clinic is also feeling the impacts of HR1. Answering a request for comment via email, quote, "Recent reductions in federal and state funding have required us to make some difficult adjustments so we can continue to deliver the essential care our community depends on. To protect the clinic's long-standing mission, we are refocusing resources on primary medical and dental services and stepping back from programs that are no longer sustainable in the current funding environment," close quote. Staff members who spoke with us on the condition of anonymity confirmed that layoffs are underway and say that those who remain are being forced to make difficult decisions as their hours are being reduced. As a result, some of the community's most vulnerable residents could lose access to services. According to Protect Our Care, both Soham Health and Redwoods Rural are part of a broader trend of healthcare systems across California. Protect Our Care points to the closure of 7 public health clinics in Los Angeles County, a planned hospital project in Clear Lake being withdrawn, and service reductions in Fresno and Clovis counties. Early warning signs of the financial strain facing healthcare providers. The advocacy organization says it has initiated a hospital crisis watch, an interactive map tracking hundreds of hospitals it says are severely affected and at risk. Matt Herdman, California State Director for the advocacy organization, said rural communities are especially vulnerable.
It's been devastating. We have a tracker of all the hospitals that have announced closures, that have announced that they're feeling financial stress, that have already shut down all the clinics, nursing homes, all sorts of healthcare facilities. There's over 1,000 of them that we're tracking. Hundreds of closures have already happened. So some hospitals are shutting down entirely. Others are shutting down specific wings that are unprofitable. We know that's been a big problem for nursing homes, for maternity wards, for drug rehabilitation clinics specifically. And then there's other places where, they're simply just worried about, can we keep the doors open, maybe having to lay off doctors. And so if you're on Medicaid and you lose Medicaid because of these cuts, that's devastating. But even for people who aren't on Medicaid, especially in our rural parts of the state, you might not have, access to the clinic that you previously did.
Concerns about the impact on rural communities were acknowledged in the legislation, with Congress including a $50 billion Rural Health Transformation Program. According for the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, the program was authorized by the One Big Beautiful Bill and is intended to, quote, empower states to strengthen rural communities across America by improving healthcare access, quality, and outcomes by transforming the healthcare delivery ecosystem, close quote. According to CMS, the program uses a funding formula designed to ensure, in its words, a fair and consistent process across all 50 states. At first glance, the allocations generally track with the overall size of each state's award. But when viewed on a per capita basis, the distribution raises questions about how equitable the funding really is. California, for example, received about the same amount as Montana, even though California has nearly 39 million residents, compared with Montana's roughly one. As the nation's most populous state, the Soham Health CEO questioned whether California's share would be sufficient to provide meaningful assistance to small rural hospitals like Soham Health.
They're doing a hub and spoke model, so more than likely I'm going to be a spoke on somebody's will, and I might get a little tiny piece of this when some of my services are being cut as much as 35%. And it's just not sustainable.
Earlier this week, Governor Gavin Newsom approved California's $352 billion state budget. He described the spending plan as balanced and structurally sound, with no projected deficit over the next two fiscal years. Even so, the budget reflects growing financial pressure from rising Medi-Cal costs and the need to absorb billions of dollars in federal health care cuts under Donald Trump's budget law. According to CalMatters, the budget also requires the next governor to consider penalizing large corporations whose employees rely on Medi-Cal, a proposal advanced by Senate Democrats, unless Congress repeals Trump's Medi-Cal cuts. But Los Angeles State Senator Maria Elano Durazo told CalMatters, quote, "This is a budget that bought time. Medi-Cal delayed, not resolved, not restored," close quote. And for Southern Humboldt Health CEO Matt Reese, he says the budget is a mixed bag.
In the current budget, there's a couple of things that help hospitals. $190 million they put into the budget for distressed hospitals. And so hospitals that are on the verge of closing, on the verge of going into bankruptcy and other things, it will help them to maintain services. But I really am disappointed in the state. They have not done increases to hospitals in over 13 years. And you know what has happened with inflation over the last 13 years? Prices have doubled.
But beyond the bottom line, one Humboldt County resident wanted to make clear that the debate over Medicaid is deeply personal.
My name is Michelle Boucher, and I just wanted to put a face on Medicaid.
She spoke out against the cuts at a town hall in Eureka with Congressman Huffman last year.
Medicare refused to pay for my wheelchair. I'm disabled, I'm on Social Security, and I have Medicare. But Medicaid bought both my wheelchairs. These wheelchairs cost $30,000. And that Medicaid expansion, it helped me qualify. I'm sorry, I'm getting emotional. And that program pays for my caregivers so that my husband can work a full-time job.
Yeah.
They make barely above minimum wage, but if it wasn't for them, he couldn't work. So it is a hugely important program, and I just want to make sure that everyone understands how important it is. It's not just for poor Americans. It's for I became disabled because I have MS, totally out of my control. And it is so important that we support Medicaid, because you never know who's the one getting benefits from it.
The concerns raised by Humboldt County residents and healthcare providers reflect a broader warning being sounded across California. That's according to State Treasurer Fiona Ma.
One-fifth of California hospitals, approximately 80 of our state's nearly 400 hospitals, still face significant risk of closure or service cuts post-COVID. 50% of all the hospitals, California hospitals, are operating in the red. And 11 of them recently applied to the state's emergency grant program because they dropped to a critical threshold of fewer than 10 days cash on hand. This is currently happening right now.
While many healthcare providers across California face an uncertain future, rural hospitals are expected to bear the brunt of H.R. 1.
So this is a real dire time for California, especially, you know, for our hospitals and the health and well-being for many of our residents who need and depend on our hospitals.
The strain isn't limited to rural communities. In Contra Costa County, one of California's better-funded health systems, officials estimate that H.R. 1 could affect as many as 93,000 residents by 2029. Nurses there have begun urging the Board of Supervisors to use the county's rainy day fund to preserve patient services and prevent staffing cuts, warning that without additional support, experienced nurses could leave the system. And staffing cuts are a concern for the state treasurer, noting that in rural hospitals, they are often the largest employer in the community.
We are going to be losing populations. We're going to be losing jobs. And the healthcare outcomes obviously are going to be plummet. So, you know, H.R. 1 is, you know, very, very scary for so many Californians at this moment.
And State Controller Malia Cohen said the impacts are widespread.
83 California hospitals are at the risk of closure. 83. More than 3,500 hospital workers lost their job in 2025 alone. And the hospitals across the state were forced to eliminate critical services, including maternity and pediatric care.
The state officials say facilities are already working on razor-thin margins, with H.R. 1 pushing them to the breaking point.
And frankly, these financial consequences, they're staggering. And counties estimate that H.R. 1 will shift billions of dollars in healthcare costs onto local governments and providers. And so what does that actually mean? That means that public hospital systems are projected to lose approximately $3.4 billion annually in federal funding once the law is fully implemented. And we expect that implementation to be fully mature by fall, maybe around October of this year.
As mentioned, some of H.R. 1's most significant healthcare provisions will begin taking effect this fall and continue to phase in over the coming months and years. A move that Congressman Jared Huffman argued was intentional, saying that Republicans delayed implementation until after the 2026 midterm elections to avoid political fallout.
We've already seen enough to know these cuts were reckless, but the sad reality is some of the deepest damage hasn't even hit yet. It's coming.
Additional changes that have yet to be implemented include new rules, as many beneficiaries will have to document at least 80 hours a month of work, school, or volunteer service unless they qualify for an exemption. It also increases the number of eligibility check-ins. State officials warn the changes will significantly increase the administrative workload and will result in people losing coverage because of paperwork or procedural issues. Protect Our Care shares those concerns. Again, Matt Herdman.
The working requirements, they're not doing what they actually intend to do. They're just making it so that more and more people can be easily kicked off so that Republicans can save more money for tax cuts for millionaires.
A frequent criticism of H.R. 1 is that its nearly $1 trillion in health care cuts was implemented to finance the bill's tax provision, which critics say disproportionately benefits the nation's wealthiest.
Yeah, I mean, Republicans passed a massive tax cut for the wealthy and for corporations around the same time. So packages like these need to be deficit neutral in order to be able to get through reconciliation. So if you want to pass something on a party line vote without having the filibuster get in the way, it needs to be deficit neutral in order to get avoid the filibuster, right, using the reconciliation package. So the reason that they had these cuts was to make their tax cuts deficit neutral. I don't think you're going to find a Republican saying, like, we are cutting Medicaid in order to pay for tax cuts for billionaires. They recognize exactly how unpopular it is, but that is, like, the factual reason that they did it this way.
But supporters of the law see it differently, saying it reduces federal spending, adds work requirements, and targets fraud, waste, and abuse within the program. Last month, the Department of Justice announced charges against 455 people accused of participating in fraud schemes, totaling over $60 billion in false claims. Here's Acting Attorney General Todd Blanche.
This team is working tirelessly to take down fraudsters who steal from taxpayer-funded programs and prey on vulnerable Americans.
While Republicans have argued that H.R. 1's cuts were necessary to address fraud, independent analysts have questioned the scale of those claims. Reviews of federal oversight data shows that while improper Medicaid payments do occur, most are tied to documentation or administrative errors, rather than fraud. Reporters also questioned whether the amount of fraud initially cited by the DOJ was consistent with what investigators ultimately uncovered.
Yeah, last year's announcement, it was $14.6 billion of intended fraud loss. This year you said $6.5 billion. I'm wondering, can you explain the discrepancy there?
Yeah, look, I think it's a combination of everything you just said. It's a combination. There were a couple cases last year that made that number that high. And so this we said this year, we have been doing an extraordinary amount of work. And when I say we, I'm not saying the Department of Justice. I'm saying everybody on the stage and the folks in the back. And part of that work includes turning off the spigot.
In May of this year, Vice President J.D. Vance took specific aim at California and accused the state of widespread fraud. And as a result, said the federal government would defer over $1 billion in funding.
That this really is two separate victims. So there are California taxpayers and American taxpayers who are being defrauded because California isn't taking its program seriously.
Speaking at the same press conference, Dr. Mehmet Oz, who leads the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, defended the administration's decision, calling it the largest deferral ever made in Medicaid funding history. He said CMS had identified questionable spending patterns, including California's home care program growing at roughly twice the rate of similar programs in other states, and said the agency wanted California to explain those outlier expenditures. However, he did not cite specific cases of confirmed fraud in California. When reporters asked why Democratic-led states appeared to be the focus of the initial funding deferrals, Vice President Vance rejected the premise. He said fraud, waste, and abuse are problems that exist in states, regardless of which political party is in power.
You may think, obviously, this is a Republican administration. We're all proud Republicans up here. You may think that this is purely a red state or blue state issue. That's actually not true.
California Attorney General Rob Bonta, however, disagrees.
Vice President Vance convened a roundtable discussion on Medicaid fraud in D.C. And while he invited our Republican counterparts to join him, More than a week ago, Democratic attorneys general were only invited late Friday afternoon, less than one business day's notice. The short notice we were given sends a clear message that we were either an afterthought or we weren't really welcome. The chief of California DOJ's Division of Medi-Cal Fraud and Elder Abuse, our Medicaid Fraud Control Unit, upended her schedule and gave up her holiday weekend to make the last-minute trip out to D.C. to attend the roundtable alongside leadership from Republican AG's offices. When she arrived, she was literally turned away at the door. Doesn't exactly scream bipartisanship.
Bonta says California has already sued the Trump administration over the Medicaid funding deferral, a case that is still being litigated. He argues the funding freeze comes on top of the health care cuts already enacted and those still to come under H.R. 1. Meanwhile, Graham Canals, CEO of the California State Association of Counties, which represents all 58 counties in the state, says concerns about H.R. 1 extend beyond partisan politics. While Canals usually takes positions that align with more fiscally conservative arguments, he says the impacts of H.R. 1 are clear.
And these don't just impact those that are on Medi-Cal. These hospital closures impact the entire community. So for those that have private insurance, they too will not have a place to go. So it impacts everyone in the community. Well, we've had challenges in the rural healthcare system and the healthcare system for many years. So that's not, that part of it isn't new. Federal government's part of that, state government's part of that, sir, absolutely. California receives bottom of the barrel in terms of federal funding per eligible Medi-Cal recipient, bottom of the barrel. So we start in a place where folks are hanging on by a thread. H.R. 1 then takes that and then eviscerates what is left.
Now that H.R. 1 has been in effect for a year, he says providers went from hanging on by a thread into a free fall.
And a free fall means payroll isn't being met. It means bankruptcies then begin to occur for these hospitals. It means communities will no longer have access to care.
As healthcare continues to be a partisan issue, Congressman Huffman says healthcare coverage will be at the forefront of the next general election.
So, if Democrats end up in the majority next Congress, I want you to know that our top priority is going to be reversing the cuts from Republicans' one big ugly bill and then moving solutions that lower costs and expand access to things like healthcare so that we can give American families a break. Most Americans are tired of the constant political theater around healthcare. They just want it to be accessible and affordable. They want to know that if they get sick, they can see a doctor without going bankrupt.
In the meantime, 8 million Americans have already lost their coverage, and another 15 million are set to lose coverage in the coming years. Now that H.R. 1 was signed into law by President Donald Trump 1 year ago, this 4th of July. For KPFA News, I'm Lauren Schmidt.